for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 405 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. Once again, it's a great doubleheader week as I interview two folks who have been on the podcast before and they give us updates as to what they're up to right now. First up is Caleb Palmquist from A Small Favor, who has a Kickstarter going on right now for the follow-up book, which is titled The Undying Soldier Number 1. We talk about why he's going to individual issues rather than trades as he moves forward, as well as what the story's about and what we can expect. Then I talk with Sam Johnson, whose Geek Girl number 5 has just been released. He gives us information as to how we can get that issue, as well as previous offerings featuring this great character and her supporting cast. He's always got a lot of great insights into the industry, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode. So let's get on with the show. It's always great to talk with Caleb Palmquist, the creator of Modern Mythology and A Small Favor, among other good things. How are you doing, Caleb?
I'm doing great. How are you, Wayne?
Good. Good to talk with you again. Let's get into what's going on. There's a Kickstarter going on. You're following up from A Small Favor. Talk a little bit about that.
All right. So this is the third A Small Favor Kickstarter. We had previously done A Small Favor, The Ruins of Enkidu, which was a full-length graphic novel that was the beginning of the story. And then we did earlier this year, we did A Small Favor, a zero issue called Welcome to Earthworld that was sort of like an introduction to the characters. And that took place before the graphic novel that we did. So now this is a new story called The Undying Soldier Number 1, which is actually the continuation of that first graphic novel. So, yeah.
Okay, so I'm trying to get it in my head where the scheme of things this goes. You said this is the third one. You've done two. Is it in between the first two, or is it after?
No, so this one is the furthest along in the story.
Okay, so this is...
This is the true continuation.
Oh, good.
The first one was sort of a zero issue, and it was sort of... We were trying out the concept of doing a single issue, mm-hmm. which was successful. People liked it. People really like that issue. And so what I'm doing from now on, at least for the time being, is continuing the story one issue at a time rather than as a full graphic novel each time.
Hmm.
And that way I can put out more issues faster, more story faster.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the graphic novel ended up taking a long time to make. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. There's a lot going on in this story, and it's continuing the story, and I think it's the best A Small Favor has ever been.
Oh, really? Well, I enjoyed what I read. You gave you made some material available to me, and I got to sit and read it, and I liked it. It's a very strong continuation of the story, which is really great. And I'm fascinated, though. Most people go the other direction. You know, most people do a single issue, and then they get to the thing to know. Well, see, on the other hand, there used to be a long time ago a company called Future Comics, and it was all graphic novels is all they did. But when they tried to sell them into like Walden Books and stuff like that, a lot of people wouldn't buy them because they didn't know who it was, who these characters were, or anything. So they ran into trouble with that. So, see, you've got a fan base that you've built by doing things the way that you have, which is really cool. And see, so you can do that kind of thing. But, yeah, most people go the other direction. They'll do individual issues. So that's an interesting way to go, something a little different.
Well, to be honest, I think that doing the whole graphic novel at once right out the bat was a little bit of a misstep. Mm-hmm. not in terms of the story, just in terms of how long it took to make and stuff. So I think if I could rewind the clock and do it again, I would have done that first graphic novel as individual issues and then collected it. And so that's what I'm going to do going forward. At least if it works out, if people continue to support it, there will be 5 issues in The Undying Soldier, which will then become the second trade paperback graphic novel in the series.
Now, is this going to be, are you going to Kickstarter the collected edition when that comes?
I think so. If there's support for it, mm-hmm. that's what we'll do. Probably in the end, after all of the issues have come out, we'll do a collected edition that probably has additional content in it. And the plan right now is actually not to really print a whole ton of copies of these single issues, mm-hmm. is to do relatively small print runs. For mm-hmm. the first 2 comics that we did mm-hmm. in the series, we printed a lot, and which is cool, but because we're planning on collecting this later, I don't want to print a whole ton past what is necessary for the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So that, because once I have the graphic novel, the collected edition, I figure that that's going to be what people will want. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to have, you know, a whole ton of these single issues lying around mm-hmm. that then I won't be able to move.
I've got to ask, I always think of these things when this stuff, and this may be getting ahead of the game, but have you ever thought of putting an entirely collected small favor volume with the first one with the stuff all in one book?
Yes. So the plan, I have written the whole story, which is 3 volumes, 3 graphic novels plus the 0 issue that we did. And the plan in the end is to collect all of that, which would end up being like a 450-page comic into one omnibus that would be the complete story.
Cool.
In the very end. So that's probably like best case scenario 3 or 4 years down the line.
Okay, because I like longer stories like that. I like to take a book and just kind of lose myself for a couple hours into it. Just, you know, get into the story, get into the characters. Even if I've read it before, sometimes I can pick up things the second or third time through. So I really like that kind of thing. Now, I got to ask, of course, and this is far away, so this may change, but have you thought about a hardcover, or is this going to be a trade?
So that's, I think that big collected edition will be a hardcover, because that will be like the authoritative complete edition of the whole book. For right now, I think the books are, these single issues will obviously be floppies, and then the trades will be, also paperback. Yeah, I mean, that's what we did in the past. I mean, the first volume is a paperback, and so I want to be consistent as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you know when the first issue will be complete?
Yeah, so the issue is about a little over halfway complete mm-hmm. as of right now. Mm-hmm. And then we are using the Kickstarter. The main purpose of the Kickstarter is to fund the rest of the art. And the teams are already all in place. And so the book should be done by early next year. So, January or February on the Kickstarter, I have the delivery date as, April. I have the delivery date as April just to give plenty of time, but I expect that it will be in everybody's hands before then.
That's the old Scotty way of being a miracle worker. He would make it sound like it was way out and you couldn't possibly do it. And then he would come in and do it way earlier, do things a lot easier than he had estimated it would be. And then he told Jordy one time in Next Generation, that's why I maintain my reputation as a miracle worker. He said, so it's good to give yourself a little extra time, because, you know, reality gets in the way of comics sometimes, and
absolutely,
you got to be ready.
For sure. And I think that's the more Kickstarters I do, the more I realize that's important, is to overestimate how long it's going to take. And so hopefully it will be done much before that. Mm-hmm. The art should be done you know, early next year, and then we'll go to print as soon as we can. So we're estimating April should be done before then.
Okay. Well, that's good. That'll be kind of a good thing. I always think of these things and try to figure out how it's going to work in the market. You know, because I always think books are great when they come out around the holidays, because people can buy them and give them as gifts and stuff, especially something like this that you're probably not going to find in many stores.
No.
So this is something to give to somebody that is into science fiction and they don't have this book. That's something to give them that's brand new and kind of fresh for them. So that's a good thing. Well, but you know what? Maybe we should ask then. If in your schedule, the way you're thinking things now, and of course that can change, are you planning to have all these issues done by the end of next year?
Well,
maybe.
So the plan is to do a Kickstarter for every issue, but I have to wait until each one is delivered before I can launch the next one. Just because I think that if you backed the first one and then I launch the second one, you're not necessarily going to back me with confidence until you've read the first one.
Right.
And so there are some limitations in terms of that. I think that probably logistically, we like best case scenario will be on like issue 4 by the end of next year.
Okay. Well, that's pretty far along.
Yeah, so my plan is to launch them, the issues, as quickly as I can. Mm-hmm. So, like, as soon as, you know, if you back this one, issue number one, as soon as you've got it in your hands, like, probably within a month, you'll be seeing the next Kickstarter launching.
Okay, well, that'll be good, because you want to keep the process going and progress happening.
Right.
Which is a good thing for that. Now, I've got to ask some of the stuff, because I think not everybody listens to every episode, and you've been on a couple times, and I've always appreciated that. It's great talking with you. What is A Small Favor about? Maybe we should get into that.
Right. So
if people don't know what this is, they should know.
Right. Okay. So A Small Favor is the story basically of a Civil War soldier who became immortal and never found out exactly why he became immortal. And the story takes place 1,000 years later. So he's traveling the stars with his AI companion, Liz, who is represented as a floating yellow head. And the two of them are sort of going on adventures in space. But the main thing that they're doing is trying to find the mysterious old man who gave James, the main character, his immortality all the way back in the Civil War. And in the process of doing that, they meet new friends, they get in the middle of massive galactic alien battles, and they are sort of unraveling this ancient galactic mystery that goes back hundreds of thousands of years.
It's really interesting, because I really like to, I always pride myself with that. I managed to get one of those early copies when you were at Tampa Bay Comic Con, I think it was.
Right.
And I was there, and you were running out, and I managed to get over there before you ran out and got one of them. So I still have it, and I'm really happy with it, because it's really nice to have something like that. Because I think as this continues to grow and you continue to tell more story, I think you're going to continue to add to your fan base. You're going to continue to get people who are going to want to know how things got started and things like that. So I think that's you're off to a good start with this. I really think that the way you're doing it too is really fascinating to me, because you use a variety of artists, as I remember.
Yep. Books.
And is that going to, well, as I noticed, because I didn't get to see, I saw some of the pages and the art styles are a little different depending on the part of the issue.
So yes, that does continue. I would say that this new storyline focuses more on what we call, as I'm writing it, I call it the modern day storyline, but what that means is the year 2811 in the distant future. Mm-hmm. This volume focuses more on that, but it still features flashbacks to different time periods. And of course, one of the other big things about A Small Favor is that every time period that we see is drawn by a different artist. Mm-hmm. So in this issue, there are some really tiny flashbacks drawn by 4 different artists, including Daryl Toe, who draws a Titanic scene. Then I have Craig Florence, who is drawing a scene on the Hindenburg. So this issue, actually, I went with some big historical callbacks, which is not something I've really done before. Mm-hmm. But I thought that would be kind of fun. And then Luca Bulgaroni is also drawing another historical scene. And those are very quick, short scenes, unlike in previous stories, we've done long, big flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the main art, as always, is drawn by Noah Meese, who has been the artist on A Small Favor from the very beginning. But this issue, we actually have a new colorist coming on, because our previous colorist couldn't make the time for this volume. So instead, we have actually Walter Ossley on color. And of course, you know Walter Ossley.
Mm-hmm.
He's the artist on Metal Shark Bro and Shiver Bureau and a bunch of other really cool stuff. And he has done a really amazing job so far on the colors on this book. And then we have a new letterer, which is Dave Lentz, who is someone who has been doing design and lettering in the comic book world for a long time, but he worked on Modern Mythology. And so so I wanted to bring him on. So the but then we also do have a backup story in this issue. So there's the main story, which starts the arc of the new volume. But then we have the story of how James first met Liz, who's the AI.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a story I'm really excited about, especially because it's drawn by Hoyt Silva, who is a friend of mine, and he's like a really cool artist. He did a book that's being published by Scout Comics called Last Stop, which is phenomenal. And he's bringing that flair and to the new story. And so people who are listening can check out a preview of that story on the Kickstarter, which is really cool. And then we have another artist who doesn't have pages in the story, but is doing the covers now, and he'll be doing the covers for every issue in this volume. That's Jonathan Fisher. So the cover that's on the Kickstarter is by Jonathan Fisher, and he also worked on Modern Mythology. So Modern Mythology was really cool because I ended up meeting a bunch of new art friends who I roped into working on Small Favor.
That's good. Well, that's a good kind of good thing about that is that as you do these different things, you probably run into people who do things the way that you would like to see them done in another project, and so that comes together nice. I do want to bring out, because you mentioned Walter, and I always, he does some really interesting stuff. He's done covers for all different kinds of projects and stuff as well. Shiver Bureau, I always remember, stood out to me because of the way he did the colors. He did color things really differently, and there's lots of blues and like greens in it and stuff like that. It was in London, which is, I interviewed him once. He said he'd never been there when he was doing that. But he had the blues and the greens were really kind of an interesting, and he did other oranges, orange-reds kinds of combinations and stuff. But it really gave it this almost an otherworldly feel to it, the way that was. And yet, at the same time, it felt kind of like London, although I've never been there either. But to me, it felt appropriate for the story, the way that he did it.
Right. So actually, Shiver Bureau is the reason that I wanted Walter on the colors. Because of that, he has this semi-desaturated color palette where, depending on the scene, one color is really dominant. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily mono chromatic, but it's like very dominated by one color.
Mm-hmm.
And so the concept for this new volume is that depending on each issue really focuses on one character.
Mm.
And we've assigned a different color to each character. Liz is yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And so this first issue, you're going to see a lot of yellow, and Walter is coloring it in that very like almost monochromatic way, where he's using a very yellow color palette for this first issue. The next issue will be focused on another character. And then the next issue, there's one issue in the volume that's going to be focused on Krydre, the little alien boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that issue will be very blue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really excited about that. I think in the same way that when you're watching a movie, like a superhero movie, and a character comes on screen and like that character's theme song starts to play,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's sort of how I'm envisioning it. Like there's going to be these colors that are very heavily associated with certain characters.
Mm-hmm. Now I got to see the cover. which gets me. I don't know if I want to ask stuff that's going to spoil things, but I'm not certain who that is on the cover because we see a person that is like, I don't know what's happening. There's like something's happening, and there's a person in a spacesuit, but it's a skeleton in there.
Okay, so the thing about Jonathan, when he draws covers, is that he likes to sort of put illusions and like concepts rather than literal interpretations of what's happening in the script. So first of all, this scene that's happening in the script, where the shuttle is exploding, is an allusion to something that happens in the script, but it doesn't happen in exactly this way. But he is like, this is a really dramatic, like exciting cover that makes you wonder, like, you know, like what's happening. Now the skull, that is James, and hopefully the red sash, the belt that he's wearing, is James's iconic. That's his iconic sash. That's like a big character defining thing for him. Now the reason that he's got a skull is because it's an allusion to like all the times that he has died.
Oh, okay.
So basically, James is immortal, but he has, he can die, but then he comes back to life right away. He's died a bunch of times and then come back and healed. He sort of has like a turbocharged healing factor.
Like regeneration.
Regeneration, yeah. So that's supposed to be an illusion. And I do realize that it might be a little bit confusing to see this script, especially if you've never read A Small Favor before, because you might be thinking that this is some kind of a ghost or or like a skeleton character, but it's not. It's just a sort of artistic license that he took.
Well, that's fine, you know, because honestly, the thing that drives me nuts in comic books is when somebody takes the very last panel of the book and puts it on the cover. Right. And I get to that place and I go, oh, I saw that already. this is where everything ends. It's just kind of like a cyclical storytelling.
Right.
I'd much rather have something that's a little different and a little creative. It's kind of more fun for me to see that. Now, I do want to ask, though, it's called The Undying Soldier. Is that is James?
No, actually. So The Undying Soldier is the person that they're looking for. So at the end of the last story, at the end of our graphic novel, The Ruins of Enkidu, James and Liz discover that there is a soldier fighting in this big galactic war. So in the background of the whole story, there's a big galactic war happening between this invading alien race and what's called the Alliance, which is just sort of like the big government body that is like sort of in charge of the Milky Way. And so there's this big galactic battle happening, and they hear about this guy, this soldier who can't die, who's like become this war hero, and he can't die. And so they think that he might know something about the old man who also made James immortal. Because, you know, this is another immortal person. So they're going to investigate and find him. So that's why they're charging headlong into a war zone to find the undying soldier. So that's sort of like this whole volume is about them looking for him. And that's another clue on the way toward the mystery they're trying to solve.
It's always interesting to me that this person started out like in the Civil War and now is in outer space. You know, the old fish out of water thing that, you know, how can this person possibly, know? But of course, he's lived long enough to be able to go through the transition. So he probably has picked up things along the way. But it's interesting to see somebody who has the roots back in the Civil War to deal with space issues.
Right.
That's an interesting thing. I like that.
So, one of the interesting things that that we're not going to see as much in this issue, but as the volume goes on, there's a really big contrast between James, who's an immortal, and this new immortal character who is much younger, but has also not hidden the fact that he's immortal. James has spent his entire life hiding the fact that he's immortal from everyone around him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to be known as an immortal person. Mm-hmm. He's trying to fly below the radar, whereas this new immortal person has embraced it and used it to become a war hero. And so there's kind of those differences in personality and that whole process of discovery and how the two characters handle immortality.
Of course, we're assuming that the same situation happened to both of them, which may or may not be true.
Right. Is what's going on with that. Right. So James and Liz certainly think that the same thing happened to this guy, and that's going to be sort of the story, is uncovering what really happened to him and what he is, and is he actually immortal?
It's interesting because, you know, of course, the notion that the person that made James immortal is himself immortal is kind of an interesting thing. I mean, that's not necessarily true either. You know, so I like shades of gray stuff, and that's what your books always have. This, it leaves me guessing. Now, did this happen this way, or is this really the way it's supposed to be? I like it because I like to be the rug pulled out from under me at times. You know, when I think I've made all these assumptions and I get to a place to prove I was completely wrong about it. I love that kind of stuff because you know where you're going, and we can tell you know where you're going, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we know where you're going, which is, you know, a great fun thing in reading.
Thank you.
It's good fun stuff. So, okay, so it's A Small Favor, The Undying Soldier, number one. Mm-hmm. It's on Kickstarter. Yep. And it's up and going right now as this posts. And are you going to make the previous materials available, like as reward tiers and stuff like that, for people who may not have gotten A Small Favor before?
Absolutely. So we have a lot of stuff available. There's obviously just this first issue. Mm-hmm. Then you can get the previous, the graphic novel and the zero issue. I'm also making the original graphic novel available as single issues. So Jonathan Fisher is actually doing covers for the single issues in volume one. So if you're so inclined, if you like single issues, we're doing a very small on-demand print run of those covers as single issues. That's available. There's a variant cover for this comic for The Undying Soldier number one, drawn by Noah Meese. And then the other thing that I haven't talked publicly about a lot, but that I'm doing with this Kickstarter, is I've actually written a novella that takes place within the Small Favor universe. That's a prose novella, and it's only going to be a digital book. But anyone who backs the physical level of the comic will get it for free. And then there is a digital level that includes it. That's a story about James before he met Liz, and it's a space story, and it's a survival space story, because he gets stranded in space without oxygen or food or means of communication, and he's floating in space. But he's immortal, he can't die. So it delves into sort of what happens to a person who can't die but is being exposed to the vacuum of space over time, and how he's getting out of that situation. So it sort of merges like Andy Weir's The Martian with the book Between a Rock and a Hard Place, which was made into the movie starring James Franco, 127 Hours.
So this is not going to be turned into a comic thing? This is always going to be a text story?
Yeah, this is just it's a novella. It's a side story. It's not critical to the main story. Like, it's not part of the mystery of his James's immortality. It's just a side novella. But I think that it expands the character and the world. And it's just extra content, adding extra value. Yeah, that's what it is. I don't know. I've never seen someone else do that in a Kickstarter, in a comic book Kickstarter. I don't know if people will be interested or not, but anyone who gets the physical copy will get it for free. So we'll see what people's responses to it is, and whether or not that's something that everyone is interested in seeing more of or not.
Now, of course, the way that I met you was through, as we said, Tampa Bay Comic Con. Are you doing more cons this year? Or how you're probably out promoting this good thing as much as you can. Of course, it's hard to get as many of them in while you're doing a Kickstarter because you're busy with the Kickstarter. But are you going to do more cons the rest of the year?
That's a good question. So I very recently went to a small con near my hometown, which was fun. And last month I went to Rose City Comic Con, in Portland, Oregon, which was a lot of fun. But I do have to say I'm probably going to slow down on conventions a little bit going into next year. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't enjoy them, but they're very exhausting. And they're very expensive. And now I went to a lot of cons this year and I didn't lose money. I mean, I made money, and of course the more valuable thing is that I made a lot of connections. I made a lot of friends, especially going to like Heroes Con. I made a ton of new friends. I got to see a lot of old friends there and that was a lot of fun. But it's a lot of time and money to spend going to them. And so I'm not going to stop, but I went to like 10 this year and I think I'll do probably like 3 or 4 next year.
Okay. Cause for us, you know, I'm followed with Stabby Bunny. We started out slow and all of a sudden we've been going along. We've been to New York. We've been to a whole bunch of them. New York was probably the biggest one. And it's just, honestly, I'm kind of looking at the end of the year and thinking, you know, once we get one or two more done, I think we're going to actually get some time off.
Right. Well, they're so fun, but they are very exhausting. The other thing is that I was really hoping this year that I would, for 2020, that I would get into Emerald City Comic-Con in Seattle, especially now that I live in Washington State. Mm-hmm. But I did not get in.
Rats.
Which, it's one of the biggest cons in the country. It's very competitive, so I understand. But it is that was a little bit of a blow. I was a little sad about that.
And we were there not this year, but the year before. Uh-huh. And it's 6 levels in this building. I mean, there's a level that's for video games. There's a level for Artist Alley. And it was just amazing. You know, you go up these escalators and there's this whole floor is filled with stuff. It in some ways reminds me of Dragon Con, which I went to recently.
Oh, yeah.
Dragon Con's kind of like that. Every floor could be another convention somewhere else.
Right.
Just amazing stuff. But yeah, I hope you get in there because I really enjoyed it. I want to go back there is what I really want to do because I just...
Oh, yeah. Emerald City is great. Last year I went as a fan. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of fun. I saw a lot of comic book friends and met some new people there and everything. And that's always been one of my favorite shows. But it is it seems that living closer to the show did not influence my chances of getting in.
Right.
Hopefully someday I'll get in there. And Rose City in Portland, that was a pretty big show. Not as big as Emerald City, but that was very fun. I really liked that one.
I haven't been to that one.
It's good. And you know, Portland is kind of like this mecca of indie comics in a way. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of like Greg Rucka was there, of course, because he lives in Portland and they actually showed the first episode of Stumptown, which of course is based on his comic book.
Right.
Ahead of its official release at that convention. So that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll happen for you. Cause I think that would be a great place for you I'll tell you a quick story about Emerald City and then we'll move on to, I've got a couple other questions. Okay. We were there and it was right at the beginning of the time when Stabby Bunny was kind of taking off and we happened to be going, we were at a CGC booth. They put Richard up in there and I would kind of help him with stuff. And then we went up to the Artist Alley floor. Somebody needed Richard to sign some stuff. And as we're sitting in the Artist Alley and he's signing, some guy comes by and says, "Wait a minute, is that Stabby Bunny? Oh my gosh, I need copies of that." And I was kind of like, we didn't have a, you know, normally we have a banner up. We do all kinds of little things to let people know what it is. All he saw was a comic on the booth, and he was just like, oh, my gosh, I got to have copies of that. And see, that's one of the things that I really like is when you go to a place like that and they're so aware of what's happening in the industry.
Oh, yeah.
That they see stuff like that. I mean, that's just going to be, you know, for you, I think that's going to be a great experience when you get to there. I'm sure it'll happen. So it's going to
be great. For sure. Well, I mean, just a little aside about Comic-Cons. What was interesting is I moved to the Northwest and I had done the first like 8 cons that I had done were all down in the Southeast, down in the Florida, like Georgia area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had started getting to the point where people would recognize me. They had seen me at other cons and read my book. And then I went to the Northwest and in some ways it was cool because there's a brand new audience,
mm-hmm.
but I was suddenly like the new kid on the block. Like nobody knew who I was.
You're back to square one again.
Right.
To do that. Well, you know, the good news is now you got 2 places that know who you are, 2 locales.
Right.
You know, you could build onto that as you go along. So it's going to be good stuff. I can't wait to. I got a chance to read the script, which I really enjoyed for the first issue. Mm-hmm. And honestly, with the artwork that you made available to me, just a couple of the pages, my imagination took over and I was seeing, based on those pages, how a lot of the script would come to pass. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this here. So I'll be definitely pledging and supporting because I want to see more of this good stuff. It's really terrific stuff.
Thank you.
Now, I've got to ask, of course, is this going to keep you busy for a while? If you're going to do individual issues and they're going to come out sort of occasionally, you're going to have to go through the whole process. Are there other things you're going to do? You said you wrote that text story. Are there other things?
Yes, so there are other things. Okay. So the big thing... I have a few, like, I mean, I'm sure as you know, like any creative person always has like different projects at a bunch of different points of development, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cause you've got whatever's happening right now and then you've got the next thing and then you've got something where that you're holding in reserve for sometime in the future and so on and so forth. But I do have another series that I'll be launching next year.
Mm.
That I'm also planning on doing single issues with. It's with Daryl Toe, who is who did a couple things for this
mm-hmm.
Story, and he did something for Modern Mythology. But he is going to be the main artist on a fantasy series that I wrote that will be starting next year on Kickstarter. And depending on what kind of reception that gets, I might be doing a single issue is going along with that one as well. It's interesting because A Small Favor at this point I've been doing for a while. And like you said, I have built up a little bit of a fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm interested to see now how that will translate into a brand new series. Something that's completely unrelated is very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Because the new series is very much like a fairy tale, and I don't want to say too much about it now, but later this year and early next mm-hmm. year, we'll be starting to do some promotion for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I was looking at what I think your website is. I think it's CalebPalmquist.com, and there's something on there at the very beginning, and it talks about 5 valid occupations in this world, which is kind of identified as Starless Dark on there. And I don't know. I got a huge kick out of it because I'm reading the stuff and I'm going like, I have to say I really like the different ones involved. You list 5 and then you list another set of 5.
So yes, CalebPalmquist.com is me.
Okay.
It's a Tumblr blog. I have not updated it for a while, and that is a post that I reblogged that I shared from somebody else. It is a funny post about different sort of tropes in fiction.
The 5 valid occupations. Jaded, who's a washed-up private detective. There's a master thief. There's a cowboy. There's a feral mad scientist. How that happens is something to find out. And a polar explorer overdosing on hubris. Now, you see, I want to know more about that. that, that's kind of wild stuff. So I it's going to be funny to see. Well, you always have a lot of good imagination in this stuff, and you always have a lot of great characters that we get to care about right away. And I'm just always interested to see what you're going to do with them. So it's great, great stuff. So it's the Kickstarter is on. It's a small favor. And tell me what the sub is again.
The what now?
Tell me, it's a small favor, The Undying Soldier number one. Uh-huh. That's what it was. It slipped my memory for a second.
Oh, right, the subtitle, right. Yep.
Yeah, that's now on Kickstarter.
Yep.
Get there and be sure to support, because we want to see more of these good things. And, you know, Caleb, I wish you continued success, because I'm really happy that Modern Mythology happened, and I'm looking forward to seeing that, too. So there's all kinds of good stuff you're doing. And I just think that you've got a bright future as far as like comic creation goes, because you work well with others and you bring a really great team together to make a great comic, I think.
Thank you. And Modern Mythology, by the way, is going to print really soon. At the time that this is coming out, it should be either already gone to print or going to print very, very soon. And with any luck, as long as there are no delays with the printing and shipping process, I should be starting to fulfill that and sending it out to backers by the end of the year.
Oh, cool. Are you going to do a Modern Mythology 2?
That's a good question. I think it depends. Like, Modern Mythology was a very different project for me because it was... I was more of an editor.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a small story in it, but for the most part, I was just managing this whole collection of stories by a bunch of different people and editing the whole book and running the Kickstarter and stuff. So it was a much more like sort of managerial role. And it was really fun to do, but it was also a lot of work. And it was scary raising that much money.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, the answer is I would like to, but I'm not sure when it will happen.
Okay. Well, you've got small favor and other things going on too, so.
Right.
Well, we'll see how it does. Do you ever get your books like in stores or like on Amazon or Comixology or that kind of stuff? Because it needs a wider distribution. I mean, Kickstarter is a great place to do stuff, but I think your books could sell if you got out in other places too.
I agree, and it's something that I need to push harder. I did have it on Amazon for a while, and I tried to run some ads and do some other stuff, and it really wasn't selling. You can buy it on my website online, and I've gotten a few sales that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available digitally. I do need to get it on Comixology. I think that is potentially a good place. So that's a really good question, because really the majority of my sales are Kickstarter and Comic Cons.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Now this new series that I'm launching next year, I am going to aggressively pitch to publishers.
Mm.
I think A Small Favor is really weird, and I don't know that it's super publisher friendly.
Mm.
I mean, I like it. A lot, of course. And mm-hmm. if there was a publisher that was offering me a deal that I thought was good, I would mm-hmm. take it. But but this new series I'm actually designing to be pitched to publishers.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we'll have to find out about that. Well, you know, I'll have to talk when that starts to percolate a little more. We can actually discuss it. So
right.
That'll be good stuff. Well, Caleb, you know, continued success. Because I know you've had a lot of good success with stuff in Kickstarter and at cons and stuff like that. I can't wait to see how A Small Favor continues and moves forward. Because it is different than than other stuff I've read. And I always like different. I like variety. So, you know, I really enjoy it. And I think that I know there's other good stories percolating that you're going to get to. And we'll just have to hang on and go along for the ride until those things start to come up. So
I will say as one final note, I have talked about some other projects that I'm doing here today. But A Small Favor is not ending. A Small Favor is continuing. A Small Favor is my baby. I love it. And like, I will continue to do A Small Favor as long as people want to support it, because it is, like you said, it's very unique. I think there's nothing quite like it out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
And And so as long as there's that support, I plan to aggressively continue to put that out there.
Well, I think you're going to be doing it for a long time if we're lucky.
Thank you, Brad.
That'll be good. So keep it up, and we'll talk with you again sometime soon, I'm sure.
Yep, sounds good.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's time to check up on Sam Johnson and the Geek Girl and Other Creations universe that he's made. How you doing, Sam?
I'm all right, Wayne. How are you?
Good, good. Why don't you talk about what's going on? I think Geek Girl number 5 is now available. How's that going?
Well, it's just come out, so I haven't had too much feedback yet. But what it is the new direction Geek Girl became ongoing during the course of the last Kickstarter, as we built the audience up enough to justify it being ongoing. And what that's given me the opportunity to do is I had a lot of weird and wonderful ideas that influenced, inspired by Grant Morrison's run on Doom Patrol that I've kind of had in the can wanting to bring to my comics for some time, but they needed an ongoing vehicle to do them justice, and that's it. So they're going to kick in because Geek Girl's hitting on a new direction. She's been offered the chance to become part of a new super team, and Johnny Carlisle is the man behind it, who was introduced in the last arc. And what was going on with him was he was a bit of a morally dubious character. Neon Girl, the big superheroine of Maine, where Ruby lives, kind of suspected him of contributing to the crime wave that was going on by allegedly indiscriminately providing super tech weapons to any comers. And he had a bit of a wake-up call, and he's now decided, whether he did that or not, he's now decided he wants to do some good, ostensibly at least. And so he's putting together a super team, and Geek Girl's popularity is a good kind of hook for him to hang that on. Mm-hmm. So he's set up what he calls the K Foundation, named after Ruby K. They've kind of rebuilt some of the super the police stations that got trashed in the original miniseries by Lightning Storm, the big bad of that series, which kind of facilitated the crime wave in the first place because she left Maine's law enforcement undermanned. So they've rebuilt these police stations, and then as they sort of reopen one of these, they announce this super team.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we get too far, let's discuss who Geek Girl is. Why don't you give us a description of who Geek Girl is and how she got to this point?
So Geek Girl is Ruby Kay, a hot popular college chick who landed a pair of super glasses on a drunken whim, overhearing her college's resident brainiac talking about them. She and her not particularly nice friend Stacy got Trevor is the name of the brainiac guy and his friend drunk, beat them again at strip poker to win them, took advantage of the horny geeks basically to win these glasses. She kind of fell in to become a superhero. Her best friend Summer kind of pushed her into it. Summer's into that kind of thing more than Ruby would naturally be. She's grown. She's become something of a hero. She's moved, developed out of her sort of shallow it girl origins and has stepped up. And as she took down Lightning Storm, she's proven herself in stemming the crime wave that followed. And here she is being offered this chance to head a super team. Mm-hmm.
Now, why don't you tell people how people get a hold of the book? Because people criticize me because I wait until the end to tell these things. Why don't you tell us, if somebody wants to get Geek Girl, the current one, number 5, or previous ones, where do they go?
So geekgirlcomics.com is the only thing you need to go to, really. That will link you to various places. You can get it, whether that's digital or physical. And also at geekgirlcomics.com, at the top left bar, there's a join the mailing list thing. So if you want to get a free digital preview comic before diving into the actual book, hit that, join the mail list, and you'll get sent that. So yeah, geekgirlcomics.com, that's the only place you really need to go, and it'll take you where you need to from there.
Well, I got to ask, of course, because you have Marcosia's logo on the cover number 5. Are they doing any distribution stuff? What's their relationship to what's going on with Geek Girl?
Yeah, I mean, Marcosia's main thing is the trades. Okay. So they facilitate that going to a number of places, Amazon being the big one. Mm. So they put out the digital edition to put out through them, Comixology, Drive Through Comics. But yeah, that's kind of their bigger involvement comes in when we do the collections, which for anyone that's followed me for a while knows I put up on Kickstarter for pre-release when we get to that point. But as it stands, it's kind of more in my hands because it's the first issue of the new arc, the jump on issue. And when the 4 issues that this comprises get collected once they've been done, that'll be where Marcosia plays a bigger role.
Okay, it'd be great. Is that American available, or is that, how's that, does Marcosia do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I say, it goes to various sites, bookshop sites and so forth. But again, the most accessible is Amazon. So Amazon.com, if you search geek-girl, both volumes are on there. So Lightning Strikes being the first one, Crime War the second. So it's a good outlet to have it, obviously, because pretty much everyone uses Amazon. And if you've got Prime, you get free delivery.
You can have Amazon deliver it by one of their drones.
One of their drones, if you're lucky. And if you're lucky, someone's there to let them in.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be great. You'll have to have a Geek Girl drone at some point delivering that stuff.
Well, that's next level, that.
Yeah. So, okay. So, number 5, we reached the point where that you're talking about. There's a super team starting to happen. This, what I liked about number 5, and I don't want to spoil too much here or spoil anything if we can help it, is there's several storylines going on in this book that I really like. There's a whole bunch of different characters. There's some people who are coming to join the group. There's, of course, Summer and Geek Girl are there. They go to check out the headquarters, I think, is one of the things that they do, which is kind of fun. And I really, you know, because I talk about this, I mean, because, you know, Geek Girl has always kind of had a certain group of characters, and now you're branching off into other areas. Talk about the interest in making new characters and bringing other people involved in this.
So, yeah, I mean, the issue is, which is kind of a standalone issue, despite it, you know, being part of a larger arc that will follow, is called Scores Out, because what happened when Lightning Storm was taken down by Geek Girl got electrocuted by in the process and ended up in a coma. Now, Ruby came back from that during the Crime War arc, but she wasn't really that keen on the idea of going back to putting the tights and capes on. She was, you know, kind of, she had a very terrifying experience. She nearly died. But her parents had been tapped out on medical bills as a result of the Calder thing. And when this opportunity has arisen at the end of the Crime War arc to join the super team, it's, you know, it's a paying gig. Mm. So she views it as, she can get some money from that, do this as a temporary thing, and then go back to retaking what she missed at college. So that's her motivation. But we have other people coming into the fold, as you've said. Mm-hmm. So we've got Johnny Carlisle has put together a team of 4, one of them doesn't appear in this issue, but was introduced in the Crime War arc, called Tyler, who's a telepath / telekinetic. Mm. That Johnny Carlisle kind of facilitated going undercover in the League of Larcenists that they were up against to help bring them down from within. So he had the idea of putting these two together, and then we've got new guys coming into it. There's a flight that coincidentally has 2 of these on it. The Whooper, who it seems like some sort of arrogant character. We introduced him next to a girl that likes to talk about her exes a lot, and he's clearly, you know, left the building mentally when she's banging on about this. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Mark Dardan's characters, Guano Guy and Mr. Marvelous Man. Now, Mr. Marvelous Man is there as a sort of escort for Guano Guy, because Guano Guy is fairly hopeless. But for reasons best known to Johnny Carlisle, he has been invited to join this team. So they're on the flight. Mr. Marvelous Man purely there to sort of check things out. And, in terms of the checking things out, this HQ has hidden stuff going on to it. If you pay close attention, there's the scene where Ruby – she uses a swipe card to get into it, which when her and Summer are going to check it out, they don't realize it opens this portal. Now, if you pay close attention to that scene, the portal is actually open a place not just to where they enter the HQ, but somewhere else as well. So there's hidden stuff going on to come in that. So we've got all that going on. And then the kickoff of the issue sees a guy we haven't met before called Jacob, who is into some sort of occult thing. Is the opening thing is he's got some sort of sigil on his bathroom mirror, and he's trying to talk through that to someone that's seemingly is in another dimension.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different characters. Are we going to see less of the previous people, you know, their friends and stuff like that? When you say school's out, I kind of feel like that they moved into a different era. And that sometimes means you leave some of your friends behind. Are we going to see less of the clique that Geek Girl used to hang around with?
Well, the clique who basically, when we're introduced to Ruby's powers, didn't really buy it, just thought she was being super klutzy and distanced themselves from her, who then resurfaced. So Ruby was pretty much left with Summer as a friend. But then when Ruby saved the city, these reappeared and wanted to be part of it, because Ruby is now popular and cool, and that's what they like to be a part of. So, they're not in this issue, but they are very much in the arc. The story, a two-part story within this, what will be four-part arc that will follow them, we'll see Ruby and Summer and one of Ruby's new teammates go to a club where they meet the girls. And, the whole Mean Girls meet superhero thing will still very much be a part of what's going on, without giving too much of away about what's going to be on this show.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be fun, because I kind of like them. They're crazy. So
yeah,
like they're
horrible people.
Yeah.
They're on a sliding scale of horrible. There's Caitlin, who's actually nice, but she's kind of on the fringes and doesn't appear too much. And then you've got Jennifer, Stacy being the one that helped Geek Girl, you know, through dubious means land the glasses in the first place. And then Karen, who's the arch nemesis, if you will, but now seemingly wants to be Ruby's best friend again. So we'll be interesting to see where things go with them. The problem with their relationship with Ruby and Summer is it's very, very flimsy and hanging on a superficial hook. So when Summer filled in briefly as Geek Girl to help Ruby out, they perceived it as it just being trying to cash in on it, which wasn't Summer's intention at all, and they froze her out like they froze Ruby out. But now everyone's kind of back together, but, you know, you don't forget the way you've been treated by your quote-unquote friends.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see how that develops as time goes along. You and I have talked before about how Summer plays a role. I like Summer. She's probably the one that's most like my perspective on things. She understands heroism and comics and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And she was actually Geek Girl for a time and then gave it back to the real Geek Girl. I'm always puzzled as to what you're going to do with her. She appears in this issue. She's friends with Geek Girl, and that kind of opens the door for her to go and do different things. I'm just curious as to what she's going to do, or about what you're going to do with the character, because I like her a lot.
Yeah, so when Ruby as we say, go to check out her HQ. Summer's tagging along with her because, you know, Summer loves the everything superhero. Ruby flies her there, which is excited about. She's very wide-eyed about everything that's going on. So, you know, they're best friends. Summer proved herself a hero and proved how much Ruby means to her in the arc. And as I say, Summer's kind of more into it than Ruby is, the whole superhero thing. However, wasn't very good at being a superhero. Didn't do too well as Geek Girl, and it was always only intended to be a fill-in job anyway. But she wants to be part of this life, and without things running, I kind of like to keep things running in an unconventional direction. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I will say that we haven't seen the last of Summer in the Geek Girl costume.
Oh, okay. That I haven't heard before. I knew she was going to be around, but we weren't exactly sure.
Oh, yeah, this is all new. We're hinting beyond issue 5 here now, Wayne, because I've been, you know, plotted out issues 6 through 8. Work is already underway on issue 6. And, yes, now, but I keep in mind, unconventional with what I said regarding that.
Okay, because now I'm puzzling over how that happens. Of course, you got to keep reading in order to keep up with these good things. So I've got to know what happens because I like her.
Yeah, she was very. I mean, despite not having the propensity for the role of a superhero that Ruby does, she was very endearing in that role. Mm-hmm. She really wanted to be good, and she did the best she could. And ultimately, in the third issue of the Crime War arc, where Summer no longer is Geek Girl, no longer has the powers that come from the glasses, is when she actually proves herself to be her most heroic.
Interesting. Now, what about the guy who had a shine on Summer? The superhero guy, what the freak is?
You say this every time.
Like, I miss it every time. What's his name?
Pitbull.
Pitbull. That's right. That's right.
He was just mentoring her. It was kind of a fatherly thing. I know you've said before that you felt that there was something there, but not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Yeah, but Pitbull, you know, this is a universe we're playing in here. These characters are still around. Mm-hmm. I mean, the villains that have come up previously, Lightning Storm, don't, you know, think that she's necessarily completely out of the picture. The League of Larcenists, headed by Pighead, who I know you enjoyed as well, with brain fused to a pig's and half a head to match. The League of Larcenists got taken down at the end of the Crime War arc. However, two of them escaped. And, you know, even Pighead, who did get defeated, I wouldn't think we've necessarily seen the last of either.
Mm-hmm. That Pighead business still bothers me, I have to say. It still gets me because this guy that has his human head fused with the pig head. Now, granted, some people, we probably wouldn't notice the difference. But that whole thing just is creepy to me, so yeah. You hit a note with me that makes me go ooh every time I see him. I like the way his dialogue is always in like reverse text, black background with the white text. It's the way other people aren't the opposite to that. So I like that about that. So this is all nicely put together. Now you mentioned there's some new folks involved and stuff. What can you tell us? I mean, we don't want to spoil the book. But what can you tell us about what goes on in number 5, what we might see coming?
So, I mean, I think I've managed to stay clear of – well, I have stayed clear of spoilers, and I don't know how much more there is I can say. We haven't mentioned another of Ruby's would-be teammates, the Minger, who when Summer and Ruby arrive at the HQ, she's already got there, and she's got a metal helmet that covers most of her face. The Minger, I don't know how familiar that word is in America, but is it familiar in America?
No.
So the Minger in England is a very derogatory name that you would use as someone that's really ugly. So why this lady has chosen to name herself that is perhaps an intriguing element of her character. And she's a little defensive. She's a bit dubious about her teammates. They watch a video of them introducing themselves, and she's already decided she thinks Guano Guy is something of a tool, which, to be fair, he is. And how that came about as well with Guano Guy, Mark Darden's characters, Guano Guy and Mr. Marvelous Man making this guest appearance, was on Kickstarter. We did one of the rewards. You could appear in this plane scene. So there's you and a friend, or you and your partner would appear in this scene. So we've got a girl and her best friend in there and a married couple. So from real life, they sent in references. Carlos Granda, the artist, drew them in. And did a great job. And Mark Darden chose to have his characters appear. And I thought we could do something with this. So we've kind of expanded that a little bit and made them a bit more integral to it. And it's a fun thing. I mean, one of the things I enjoy about comics is the crossover element. And, yeah, it's been a cool thing to do. And Mark, as you've seen the credits, was involved in. I did the sort of basics of what their dialogue would be, but he made it their voice. And so was directly involved with them. So you're getting authentic, for those of you that know Guano Guy, you're getting authentic Guano Guy.
Now, of course, these guys are in your book. What about... is Geek Girl might show up in a Guano Guy book?
We haven't actually talked about that. And also, I'm not quite done with these guys yet either. So Mark and I are talking about, he's got a Guano Guy Kickstarter coming up in about a month. Mm-hmm. So if you're not familiar with the character, that's a good one to look out for. So we're talking about doing some cross-promotion. And once they kind of, again, I'm going to watch for spoilers, but they will be in issue 6. And then after that, that will kind of, if anything more is to come with any type of crossover with us, it would follow that, because their story isn't done in the Geek Girl universe as of yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something, because I like those characters. I've seen the Guano Guy books and stuff. So I was really surprised to see them in the comic, which, of course, you know, it made me want to ask you about those good things, because I'm always fascinated when, you know, team books are a staple in comics. And so it gives people a chance to bounce off characters they might not normally do, or get interactions. Yeah. So we're going to get to see sides of Geek Girl that we haven't seen before, because she's the leader of the group, apparently. So she's going to have to figure out who these people are and how they can work together. That's going to be a real evolution for her character.
You'd think that, but I do like to keep things unpredictable. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it all plays out. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I guess in issue 6 we'll see some of the ones that we haven't seen in this book so far, some of the people.
Yeah, I mean, all the super team are present, mm-hmm. apart from Tyler, who's in the Crime War arc. So that's mm-hmm. that's the first appearance of Tyler. Mm-hmm. But everyone that's going to be in the super team is about. But there is another element going on here, an X factor at play in terms of from Johnny Carlisle's side, wherein I'm already giving, I think, just about as much as I want to give away about the book, but we'll just allude to that there's a situation with him and his wife, mm-hmm. which... as I say, is a kind of an outside thing that may impact on his plans in terms of a superhero team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's going to be something to see. So, because it's a really good story, really well developed characters. And is the art team pretty much the same? It looks to me like it's the same as what you've had in the past.
Oh yeah, Carlos has been there through both of the previous arcs. Carlos, I mean, everyone has been involved since pretty much the beginning. Chung Lin Zhao and the colorist, Paul McLaren, the letter. Everyone's into it. Everyone's committed to it. So it's great to have the consistency and everything that they bring to it. I mean, particularly, I always reference with Carlos how human he makes everyone, the facial expressions, the body language he he brings to it, which is a lot down to, you know, I'm not nailing all of this down in the script, so he's got to work in some rigid formula. It's he gets the characters and he brings those characters to life. So it's great to have, you know, that. I couldn't do better. And yeah, as I say, it's great to have a team that everyone enjoys doing it, is really into it. And yeah, and continuing with it. So we've got that consistency as well.
And of course, there's other characters that we haven't mentioned that are involved in the book, and I won't go into that. But let's just say trouble is caused by some of these new people.
Yes, I have managed to not mention one particular character at all, which is good because I feel like I'm close to saying too much, but we won't do that. But yeah, there's also something else going back to at the beginning. This guy, this occult guy. There's something brewing there. Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting stuff. A lot. Again, I don't want to spoil stuff, but there's just when you think you've figured out what's going on, it doesn't go that way, which is what I really like. So there's really good writing and really good. I love Carlos's use of faces.
He does
faces super well, which I really like. And there's just a lot of expression and stuff. But it's just such a good book, number five is. And, of course, it continues on from where you've been before. Now, so, in other words, you've given the information now how to get a hold of the book, and now you said it's monthly.
Okay. Ongoing. That's been confused before. In the world of independent comics, putting out a monthly book is not the easiest thing in the world. So, ongoing. What will follow after this issue is the next two will be on Kickstarter in February.
Yeah, sorry, when will the Kickstarter happen again?
In February. So, again, if you want to get the exact date, good thing to do, join the Geek Girl mailing list, you'll get the date in advance because it's not entirely sorted yet, other than it's going to be February, and that will be for issues 6 and 7.
Okay.
And, yeah, things are all set up here, and I look forward to continuing with what we begin in this issue.
Well, that's good. That's good stuff. We're going to ask how, because monthly stuff is, that's tough stuff. I'm wondering how in the world you could possibly do it.
the original miniseries was put out pretty much monthly, and it's a financial drain doing it that way. But yeah, I mean, again, like there's more, if it's a sort of direct arc like the first arc and the Crime War arc, I think it's kind of more necessary so you don't sort of lose the thread for it to come out more regularly. But as I say, issue 5, though part of a larger arc, is kind of contained. And then issue 6 and 7 will be a two-part thing within the four-part arc, and then 4 will be another thing. So it works to do it like this. And hopefully you're left waiting for those, intrigued for those new issues after reading issue 5.
Well, it's going to be something to see, because I always like super teams, and I'm always waiting for whenever I talk to people who are creators, I'm waiting for them to decide when they're going to do the team up thing, because, you know, crossovers and team ups and all that stuff, that's all great stuff, and people love that pretty much. So I'm glad you're doing that.
Yeah, no, I mean it's really fun, and it's also you don't really know quite how it's going to go until you put two characters together. Like Pitbull and Summer as Geek Girl was a cool thing, and then Neon Girl, who's generally, you know, as I say, she's the long term resident superhero of Maine before Geek Girl came along, and they developed a kind of chemistry as things progressed, and it was fun in the final issue of the Crime War arc seeing them taking on the League of Larcenists. They developed quite a good dynamic, and all stuff I'd like to, you know, see more of.
Well, it's going to be good because it's a lot of fun. Now, I know that you do other good things. How are your other characters and projects going? Are they bubbling around right now?
So the Almighty's the comedy super team created with Mike Gagnon, same as before, developing slowly. Everyone's involved in other stuff. All of the roughs are done. Most of the finished artwork is done. It's still carrying on, but it's a slow process with that. And the other thing is Carl Pacini, Voodoo Junkie Hitwoman,
right,
who previously appeared in issues, Halloween issues of IFX anthology, but I don't know if I mentioned this last time I was on, is as part of the weirdness coming to Geek Girl, will be coming to the pages of Geek Girl. And then there's a mini series for her that's mostly done, but I wanted to introduce her into the pages of Geek Girl first. So again, getting a lot of stuff here about issue six, but yeah, Kabra also comes into the fray in issue six of Geek Girl.
Okay. She's not going to join the group, is she?
She's definitely not going to join the group. It's going to be Carbaccini is the ex junkie / prostitute who cleaned up her act, but now is addicted to voodoo and is a supernatural hitwoman for hire. Her connection comes about. I'm just giving too much away. So that'll be one for the Kickstarter. But yeah, Carbra is a character I really enjoy writing. And her intro scene is quite a scenery chewing one, which I really like. And yeah, it should be another weird element coming as part of the weirdness coming to Geek Girl's new universe that she's now kind of falling into.
Mm-hmm. I always have to bring up the fact how much I like the women characters that you write. They seem extremely real to me. And sometimes in comics, I find, as we've talked about before, that women characters are some of the less believable ones. But you do them so well. They really breathe for me, and they just feel like, you know, vibrant, living characters. So I like that in your books. And even in number five, it's quite the same. Even the new ones are very real to me.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, in terms of Ruby and Summer, I hadn't actually properly thought about this till now, but I think one of the reasons they come across as real as they do is partly because of their dynamic, which feels, you know, you can tell how much they care about each other, love each other. But I think the fact that Ruby, while Summer is all superheroes without being a superhero, I think the fact that Ruby kind of isn't all in on it, I think that keeps her slightly grounded and as, you know, almost a step removed from the sort of what we're used to in superhero comics, where they're generally sort of all in. She's, you know, as I say, at this moment, she's doing it because she wants to go back to college and be able to hang up the cape. So I think her perspective and the fact that, you know, we see her friends who are not directly connected to the superhero world, again, the Mean Girls meets superheroes element, I think helps certainly with the sort of realness.
Mm-hmm. What's really going to be interesting to me to see how all this all comes together, because it sounds like she looks at this more as a profession those of us who were interested in these things, we would look at it very differently. We'd want to do it all the time if we could, but it sounds like she's going to do things, you know, what needs to be done, and then to get back to real life.
That's her intention. I mean, she had in the first arc, she tried to sort of give it her all, but, you know, for a 21-year-old girl to get put in a coma as a result was, no pun intended, a wake-up call when she came out of the coma, that it's real. You know, we've had, you know, people have died, and Lightning Storm was a terrifying villain for her who did a lot of damage, and she, you know, she did defeat Lightning Storm, but she only just came out of that. So, you know, from a perspective of a girl who is studying PR at college, and that's what she was doing until she fell into this situation, I think it's quite understandable her perspective is not that she's now, I'm this woman of steel and I'm just going to go around kicking everyone's ass. There's other things going on, and that isn't, you know, again, it's the place she comes from was quite a privileged, you know, she was a popular girl and lived quite an easy lifestyle, a very easy lifestyle, really, that was, you know, was quite self-centered. She's evolved beyond that, but she's still, you know, that 21-year-old college student.
Mm-hmm. Which has got, I mean, she's probably got a lot of room to grow, which is one of the great things about the characters in here. They all develop. Where they are now is not where they started out when the book first began. So I love character growth. I love to see where people move, the dynamics and stuff, and I think you do a really good job of doing that and making people, you know, real and also progressive in that sense. They move forward.
Yeah, I mean, Ruby is a much more likable character. Well, is hopefully a likable character. Period. Now, whereas initially, you know, the way she, I mean, she actually acknowledges in when they're watching the video in at the new HQ, where all the superheroes have done, the would-be superheroes have done like their bit to camera introducing themselves. She kind of like feels embarrassed now about how she got these powers to begin with. And yeah, she's definitely developed, and it's something I enjoy is developing character arcs, and that's going to be happening with Cara Bracini as well. And yes, yeah, some are trying to find their way now, and Johnny Carlisle as well, who you know was certainly a man of seemingly dubious morals, is now throwing himself into this super team situation, which generally you'd think you'd be a good person if you're doing that, but there's money involved, so we'll see.
Yep. It's just that money is the great equalizer of things. We all discover who we are when money gets involved, I think.
Yeah.
So it's really good. Geekle number 5, of course. If you haven't been reading it so far, I highly encourage you to get the past issues. And if you have been reading it, then I think Geekle number 5 is going to be a great transition into where she's going for the future. So it's really, really good book. Really well done. So why don't you once again tell people how to get a hold of it?
Yep, so I mean it's available in regular, digital, limited variants. There's like Sun Kamanaki who did the cover for it, is a fantastic artist, and there's a virgin variant of her cover if you want not just purely her artwork. Limited variants. There's a photo cover, limited variant of Lady Larkin who cosplays Geek Girl. All of this, geekgirlcomics.com, it will link you to it. If you're looking for the limited variants, eBay is probably the easiest thing. They will be up in Indie Planet. I don't know if they are yet, but basically the homepage of Geek Girl, there's three links at the bottom to getting them wherever. They're all available through that.
And I always say, remember the hyphen.
Always the hyphen, but not on the website. That's confusing now. Don't put the hyphen in geekgirlcomics.com. It's geekgirlcomics.com, all one word.
Okay.
But if you're searching for on like Amazon and that, geek-girl, because there was a series of books called Geek Girl, which bear no relation. And if you get them, you're going to be scratching your head waiting for the super heroics to kick.
Now, I remember you don't go to many conventions.
Well, it depends. I have phases. I'm actually doing one as this goes out today in Sheffield. So, yes, that's the first one I've done this year. Mm. I mean, Kickstarter is something I've got very into. And it takes, when you have a Kickstarter campaign, it takes a lot of prep. It takes, I mean, whenever I've ran the campaign, I've had the whole month off the part-time day job that I work in order to devote full-time to it. And I enjoy it, and it seems to be a great way of getting people involved and sort of, well, integrated in terms of like the plane scene reward we did. So that's because that's something I've got into fairly recently. That has been something I've been very focused on. But yeah, doing a convention today as this goes out in Sheffield, called Out of This World, and we'll see if that leads to more. Yeah,
it'd be kind of fun, because one of the things I noticed, there are several people here in the States that give out, or shall we say, they sell their book, and the only place they do it is during conventions, and they seem to be able to make it work. And I don't know if that's a model that you want to embrace, but you know, it helps. If nothing else, it helps get the word out about what you're...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not been particularly conscious that I've done plenty of conventions, but the fact that I haven't done any this year until now hasn't been a particularly conscious decision. It just sort of, it's kind of worked out that way. But also, as I say, the amount of time prepping, setting up, running a Kickstarter takes, you know, a lot of focus. But yeah, I'm certainly not averse to conventions. And if this one goes well, then I'll certainly be looking to do more. In terms of America, because I'm in the UK, Sheffield is the UK, it's a budget thing, so that's something I want to do down the line, but it wouldn't be a cheap thing to do, so we need to have a bit more in the bank for that, I think.
It'd be fun to have you at New York Comic Con sometime.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to do some of the big desk.
New York is my favorite, and I love to go around and do those kind of things. Although Dragon Con, which is in Atlanta, I really came to love this year. Emerald City, there's stuff all over the country right now, and so it's really
good
for us. But, you know, it'd be great to see you go on and get out in the public and get the word out. But you're right about Kickstarters. Kickstarters, people look at them like as if they're something, you know, easy, and you just pop something out there and people give you money. But as you prove, you got to work hard at it, and you do a good job on your Kickstarters. So, you know, that's great stuff. It's people should look at your Kickstarters and learn from how you do it, because you do it right, I think.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that does Kickstarters or is looking to, I always recommend as well Comics Launch with an X, comicslaunch.com. The podcasts that Tyler does there have been very useful. So if something you want to get into, I recommend listening. There's a library of these podcasts, and there's much more than you'd think to run a campaign, and I found them very useful. So that's my tip for anyone that wants to get in at comicslaunch.com with an X.
Okay. Anything else that you want people to know about what you're up to?
I think we're good. I think I've given away just about enough of Geek Girl without spoiling anything. I mean, it's an extra size issue, so there's room in there for plenty of stuff. And I'm excited. This is my focus right now. I'm excited with where it's going. As I say, I'm bringing ideas that I've had in the can but haven't had the right venue for. Things are going to get weird, and I'm into that.
Well, you know, it's great. You and I have been talking for quite a while now, and it's great to see you, you know, making these things on a regular basis and making them happen, you know, and it's great that you've reached this place, and I hope you get to do even more as the future goes on, because I think people will like what they see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy. I can, you know, hand on my heart, say I would recommend it. I do it because I love it, and the creative team's super into it, so I'm invested in it. I've got big plans. There's lots more to come, and 5 is a great place to get on the beginning of it.
Well, Sam, keep it up. You're doing wonderful stuff. Of course, again, it's Geek Girl with a hyphen in it in the middle.
Geekgirlcomics.com without the hyphen. Just to keep it simple.
I don't think you can put a hyphen in a name like that, can you?
Probably not, but just remember, if you're searching for same on Comixology, Amazon, anywhere you want the hyphen in there, geekgirlcomics.com, or one word, no hyphen.
All right, Sam, well, you keep it up, because it's good stuff, and I can't wait for more people to get a chance to read it, because now it's available. This is your chance. So get out there and do that, and thanks, Sam, for talking with me. We'll talk with you again sometime in the near future, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Thank you, Wayne.
And that's a wrap for this episode. And in coming weeks, I'll have some great interviews, so be sure to be here. But until then, keep reading your comics.